next guest has been a professional hairstylist for over 20 years, with the vast majority of those years spent being self-employed and running her own salons. In 2015, she ventured to establish her own unique brand, Hallo Hair, with the intention of franchising by converting containers into hair salons. In this time, she has also established two of her own products as part of her brand offering, with a third in the making. Now, 5 years later, she has a large and loyal customer base situated in the heart of Four Ways Johannesburg, where she strives to provide a personal and memorable experience for everyone walking through the doors. Welcome, Tamsin Reynolds.
Thank you for having me.
So as an entrepreneur and as a businessman, I want to have conversation with you, because I think the first thing that I just want to, what I found very interesting is, and people might miss this on your website or even when we speak about it, when you speak about owning your own salons to going towards a brand. And that's a big step, saying that I'm going to establish a company, it's going to be a particular location, but I want to make it a brand. What was your thinking there? Why did you do that?
So I think it was sparked from the idea that my uncle actually had a big franchise salon chain in the Free State called Mason Costa. So I grew up in awe of what they'd done. So for me, it always stuck in my head that, you know, success meant multiple of, multiple of one thing.
Yeah.
To define, you know, that you've done really well for yourself if you've created one and copy and pasted and recreated that same magic in another setting. Let's call it that.
Yeah, I mean, not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And especially not with a service business. You know, you have to be so hands-on. I speak from exact experience. It's a very challenging thing. So now I see, you've got Hallo Hair, Hallo Nails, and Hallo Pillow, and I think people would be surprised as to why that, but I think it will make sense in a minute. But at some stage and at some reason, just give us a little bit of reason as to, you're taking all of this on now. You want a franchise. You want established brands. Where did it all come from? Not just from where you sort of picked up the idea of why you wanted to franchise, but what drives you in the morning when you wake up as to why you want to run this particular or a business?
So if we go back to the core of me and who I am, I think I've always been an entrepreneur at heart since I was very young. I saw an opportunity and tried to make something of it, and there was generally a way to monetize. So my youngest experience was, for example, I had two giant pecan nut trees in the garden, and I would throw up sticks, knock down the nuts, put them in a little plastic bag, wrap them with cellophane ribbon and sell them at school. Or I would go and buy ice lollies, affordably from the green grocer, and then sell them with a bit of a markup at sports days in my cooler box. And so for me, it's always been a bit of an exciting thing, kind of see where there's opportunity and create something from it. And that's what drives me, actually. It's almost like, not to make too light of it, because it also, obviously the ups and downs, but it actually really feeds me on that's kind of where I play. When I'm innovating, when I'm creating, that's when I'm in my flow and my happy space.
So
obviously that is where it kind of, where it derives from.
Well, you said create. So is that part of the reason why you chose this particular industry? Hair, and it comes with a very personal service. So do you have, both sides of that's very difficult to do always?
Yes, it is. And I think, again, I molded my footsteps in hairstyling a lot on my family's way. My aunt was the one who was trained under my uncle, who took me under her wing and trained me. So hairdressing, again, I saw it as, my aunt had a very successful hair salon. And as a young girl, I watched her run a business and balance family life in what looked like a very good way. And I decided that looked like a good opportunity. So we could say she was kind of a mentor to me. It was only after, becoming a stylist and then eventually running my own businesses that I started to realize that my passion really came in the brand building. In building the name, the culture, the products, who we stand for, what defines us, what our USPs. So, that's kind of where the creativity and the service come in, is the fact that I'm not just a stylist, i.e. I just stand there all day doing hair. The fact that I get to do hair, get to, you know, work on a very ground personal level with my customers, but then also feed that creative need of mine of what's new, what's next, how can I develop my brand moving forward.
You know, hey, when you just sit there, and that's exactly what we try to sort of uncover in brands and stuff, when you say cutting hair, you know, it's not just cutting hair, especially to the people sitting there. There's a feeling that comes with it afterwards, and it's almost like a shower, you know, halfway through the day when you're really feeling tired, you jump into a pool or you get to have a shower. It's that same sort of thing, and it's extremely personal. And one way to obviously grow your business is to expand your offering, and you're quite wide in your offering. So it's almost in one way, because, I mean, you come from hustle days, and you know, now you would call that hustle, you know, when it was us, I'm sure it was just entrepreneurship. Now you've transitioned into this wide offering. Isn't it a little bit trying to be everything to everyone, and how's that worked, and has it worked for your business?
So I would safely say probably not. I think you certainly compensate, you know, on one when you're focusing on the other. There's a lot of times where I'm a very busy hairstylist, so I have an amazing customer base, which means I'm booked in advance. I haven't actually taken new customers for a while, but I'm currently feeding my new stylist, who's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, with that means all the other things take a real back seat, i.e. on my one day or for months, I kind of run around and, you know, creative direct whichever product launch I want to do, or I work during the evening. So obviously that takes away then from energy, as is the age-old struggle, you know, being a mom who also has a business, who's also trying to promote products, who's also trying to work in her salon, who's also trying to... So for sure, I don't think you can do it all. And in fact, I think at, you know, kind of the cost to myself is I've treated it as an absolute baby, Hello Hair, to the point, I think, that I kind of didn't let go soon enough and train someone up underneath me in that role, so that I freed myself to work on the business a bit more. But I, as you say, I mean, I take it so personally. I mean, my clients are, you know, I have a relationship to them. I feel, so, you know, I'm learning to wean myself off. let's call it that.
So here you are, 2020 comes in, and we've got the pandemic on top of that. We've got probably relevant to say a very dysfunctional government to add towards that, regulations that stop you and prevent you from doing business, something that's always been, at the forefront of hairdressers and hairstylists, as where, you know, hygiene and how all of that is handled in studios. So how's the time been, and how do you still sound so relatively positive?
I think, you know, just as an individual, I've kind of had to survive a lot in my life. So in fact, I operate quite well from the space of uncertainty and what to do and staying afloat. So I kind of find my groove at times like this. And I actually had tapped into tremendous inspiration as a result of having had time to reflect and think of what's next for me, and trying to take, you know, aspects of what I've learned so far and determine where I'd like to place them for the future. So business-wise, you know, from an economical perspective, obviously the impact of closing my salon doors for 3 months was tremendous. Yeah. Thank goodness, you know, I managed to get tours for my staff. As we know, that's just a drop in the ocean, but it was something. Applied for all the grants, and naturally, I say naturally, I just, you know, I think I share the same sentiment as you, when I'm not feeling particularly supported by any government initiative, so that didn't come through for me. So I've had to, as I say, think outside the box on ways to keep afloat. It was also an absolute priority for me to educate my clients throughout that time, keep completely connected to them, and I, you know, I adjusted to going onto video and keeping in close contact with people, keeping my brand presence, you know, afloat. And then obviously when we reopened, just really reinstating the fact that, you know, I had their back, and I was very vigilant about the protocols that I introduced. In fact, I created a sub brand called Hello Again, where I actually launched salon protocols. I mean, salon safety gear for specifically for salon owners, which I kind of just missed the boat.
Yeah.
At because I launched it kind of as the president said, oh, by the way, you can open, yes, like at midnight.
Yeah.
Without very little warning.
Yeah, and then so, it was out there already.
There was out there. But anyway, so that's how I've survived. I've survived by thinking outside the box, by keeping a close eye and connection to my customers and ensuring them that, you know, I'm really, I have the absolute safety at heart, and they know that. They know that I wouldn't put them at risk.
Well, you know, normally I'd say this more towards the end, but, I mean, it's very brave, Tamsin, and, you know, if I think back about all the women we've spoken to on podcasts and all the business owners, you know, it sort of just went over me, and with Tammy also on the line, that women are so strong in this particular time. And if I think about how they spoke and how inspiring it was and how they've adapted, we've also got family women businesses that also has adapted over the current time, and how they still managed to see, you know, some, it's courageous. And I really am very grateful that there's still entrepreneurs like you that's willing to stand up in the morning and get going and do what we need to do. And it's not all, in fact, most of the time it's not easy to, especially now. So it's very brave, and I commend you on that. And also the connectedness you had to your staff to have that presence of mind. And it's probably the why you're doing so well, because your service is so attentive, and that also goes to the people that you employ. And it's part of the value chain that we always speak about here, about, you know, when you go and sit down and have a haircut, you know, let me put it as simple as that. You know, what people don't always understand is that there's products that get sold there. That's people that's got logistics, it's manufacturing people, they employ people. Every time you use a product or a coat to put over us, there's a manufacturing and a value chain behind it. So you always think that your impact is not so wide, but it's incredible. And especially if you look at independent businesses, the pool that they have together is so needed and in our economy. And I'm just extremely grateful, and it's not always possible to do that, that there's so much bravery on this particular subject at the moment. And getting on to that as part of the mistakes that we make, because the more I speak to you, you've got so much to offer, and if people listen to this, and men or women that's starting a business, doesn't matter in what industry it is, and when you're thinking of brand and where to expand into, and it's a fantastic foundation to listen to. And I want to then ask you, you know, some of the mistakes that you've made, because we learn in life, and, you know, whether it's in kids and in the mistakes that we make, we learn the most, and it stays with us the longest. And we don't want to make it a show that it's about that. We want to put it in a positive light. You've invested money in manufacturing product, and it's been a rough ride. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so let's just say I saw what I perceived as being a gap again in the market, something that I came across overseas, that kind of seemed like a no-brainer, and why hadn't I seen it everywhere in South Africa? And amidst my excitement, and naturally I ran it past a couple people, and everyone kind of said, oh, that's amazing. And in my enthusiasm, there's no better way to say it than I completely got ahead of myself and ordered tons of said items, thinking, you know, and this is going to be, the way of the future. However, I didn't take the time yet, and I've learned since then, you know, that I almost want to refer to the analogy of the bamboo, whereby you've got to kind of, you know, they plant that seed, and it only comes to fruition 7 years later, I think it is, or 6 years later, where that bamboo shoots up. It's like something ridiculous, flipping like, I think it's like 60 meters in a short space of time. And the whole theory is if the ground hadn't first been ready, it wouldn't have sustained the growth. So all I can say is I think I shot up too fast. I hadn't really done my homework. I hadn't educated people first on the product. But, you know, this is all teething. I never came out of business school. I never had the opportunity to even brush shoulders with someone who'd ever created their own product from scratch before. I just, you know, I used my initiative and I moved forward. And as I say, I actually haven't given up. So I've actually just launched a campaign today on that same product, my first digital campaign, which I'm very excited about. I've redone packaging. And, you know, so I'm still here. I'm still hanging in despite initial disappointment. Not letting go.
Yeah, I tell you, you just in the last three summaries, what you said there, people are going to pick up so much about that, where they understand, where research and, you know, what's your sort of, you know, what market are you representing your product to? Is there a share for it? How adaptive or receptive would they be to it? And sometimes it saves us a lot in the future. But lesson learned, I hope it wasn't too expensive. So you wanted to start a second store. I, you know, relate to this. It's incredibly difficult to grow a business based on people. You know, technology as an example, in telecommunications, you just grow it by technology. It normally requires more salespeople, which then goes into more operations people. It's a simpler, close process because everybody sort of have a focus on what they need to do. But I also find that in a service business, and especially if you're the face of your business, once you wanted to grow it, people want that face everywhere, almost in every interaction. And, you know, in the best of intent, when I speak to people in the beauty industry, it's very similar there. With the best of intent, everybody feels comfortable with them. I am unfortunately the same. You know, I get comfortable with somebody, especially in that industry, and then I want to see them. So now you want to grow your business. Tell me about that challenge with that in mind.
Exactly as you mentioned, and I think, you know, it comes to mind actually coming to Country Meat for the first time as well. You know, you guys were quite hands-on there. And then you scaled, obviously, and you were spending time at all your stores. And I think your customer base, they miss the face of the business. You know, it's not just meat. It's that hello, that I know you, that what will it be today? So I think it's all proven, you know, that owner-run businesses are more successful. So leaving it in the hands of capable staff is ideal. I think that requires a hell of a lot of training and mentoring. And that is where I, again, kind of went wrong, is that I was, as I say, a very busy hairstylist myself, and tried to scale the business relying on, you know, the brand reputation, and thinking that the fact that it was actually the second store I opened was in the same center as my first store, thinking that, you know, if there's any issues, at least I'm right there. But it really was a runaround. I literally, when I was in the one store, clients would say to me, Pam, you know, the other store's not the same when you're not there. Then I'd go to that store. Then the staff would say, Pam, you know, the staff aren't like this when you're not here. And so actually, I think it was too close for comfort. The fact that they knew I was there actually turned into a bigger problem than I realized, firstly. And secondly, the fact that, you know, client base in my area were used to me, I think, was another issue as well, because it wasn't really my reputation that carried across, it was my absence that was felt. So that was another lesson for me, is, you know, if you were to open a second store, it would need to be something I would have time for to carefully pick, you know, new staff members or existing staff members that have worked alongside me, preferably, and kind of plant them in another location with, you know, kind of the understanding of how Hello Hair operates, and grow from there, having, you know, to carve out time to do that and step away from behind the chair. So, you know, I think that is the challenge for a lot of business owners, is how do I make another one of these when I'm not going to be there?
Yeah, and I think for, you know, if you look at the big brands, they make it look easy. And listen, it's not easy, but they've got such scalability with also human and cash flow and huge amount of access to money, you know, so they can wait for longer returns of their profits and et cetera. So they put people in place. But it is possible in that format. And that's why we also find it so important, Tamsa, to highlight the people that's within your business. And what we sometimes do, and it's so that clients get to know them really for who they are, because I think people need to go in a mindset like small businesses need to grow, you know, and we need to go with a different support mindset. You know, there's brilliant, all of us are brilliant people, you know, you just happen to be the founder and the face of it, and that's where some of the comfort is. And as long as we can transfer, and that's a responsibility on top of the responsibilities or emotional responsibilities we carry, is that we have to be able to empower others that work around us, that help our brands when other people interact with them. And I think it is possible, but it's always a lot more challenging with small business in mind, where you have to work in your business and then at the same time on it, and with limited cash flow and resources, and you don't have access to all the digital stuff and the technology and etc. Anyway, it's it's challenging. And I really commend you for where you are now, but very importantly for the mindset, because if you're in the mindset that you are, you will have the ability to see a way out, a way forward, and have clarity of mind as much as we can, because I don't think it's possible to have full clarity of mind at the moment, that there's a mindset to go forward and take the business forward. And the clients that supported you over all these years, you know, incredible, and I'm just so grateful on your behalf, you know, and every time we do that. And thank you also for ensuring that you don't just serve a role as a selfish business owner for your own enrichment, but you've got such a heart for the business, the products and the brands and everything that stands under it. And I really want people to go and have a look, because there's such a wide offering that you offer. It's men, it's women, it's children, you know, it's all sorts of products. You know, the pillow as a complete interesting one. I saw the pillow, or Hello Pillow, was that it's good for your hair, or it suits your hair. And I thought it was brilliant. I first thought, what would that do with hair? And now Tamsin has literally lost the plot. But then when I read it, it made sense.
Exactly that. That's hence the, you know, needs a bit of education.
Yes.
And I think to highlight the keyword, it's beauty, not bedding.
Yes. Okay. Gotcha.
During a time like this of uncertainty, was so important. And just something I wanted to add that popped to mind while you were chatting is that it's interesting for me, because I'm finding freedom in that space of uncertainty where, you know, I'm pursuing words like possibility rather than things like opportunity, where something like a word like possibility leaves room for the unknown. What could happen? What could happen next? And now what? As opposed to this will happen and this should happen and I want that to happen. So, you know, I think this experience of COVID having removed all my certainty has certainly, you know, given me, it's softened the edges on what I've deemed to be possible and practical. And, you know, so I think I'm just softening my approach, and I'm finding that in that approach, I'm actually being more open to new possibilities, which I think will attract opportunity, rather than diving down the rabbit hole to chase it, if that makes sense.
It makes complete sense. And I tell you, possibility to opportunity. And I know exactly what you mean that. And let me show you that I'm not joking when I say that. You know, opportunity is more of a selfish, in, you know, it's got a, let's say, a
it's like a masculine almost connotation.
Yeah, 100%. You know, or you know,
something you seek out. Not correct. To say that's a bad thing.
No,
drive and
not
ambition
at all.
Is a great thing.
No, of course.
You know, possibility feels almost slightly more playful.
Yeah.
Not so, you know, you must. It's kind of like, well, what now?
Yeah. It will have similar outcomes, but with a very different mindset, it will have a very different sustainability to it. I think if you approach it in those two ways, and you know, as a moment between us, I tell you, I'm just amazed, and Tammy will understand why I say this very well, about if I just sit here with how women are just so clear on things at the moment, where we are. You know, when somebody says something, then I go, yeah, that's what I was thinking. But I don't know how to say it. And when you now, in this particular time, with 3 months of closing your business, which, you know, I haven't even gone through, and I can just imagine, you still sit and know what is the next step. And I think that's what I want people to really buy into here. That next time that they sit down with you, or next time they're moving into the area and they're looking for people, you know, this is a whole different way of engaging with people, and then more importantly, the brands and the labels behind them. And I really am exceptionally grateful, and I learned a different side of you today. So I'm very grateful, and thank you very much for coming on. And I'm sure people are really going to enjoy this.
Sometimes you kind of feel that that ground, you know, is understood from both sides in different ways. So that's great. From both of you, a big thank you. Thank you for inviting me on the show, and obviously an opportunity to speak to any, you know, South African business owner or business owner in general at this time. If any of what either of us has said has added a little bit of value, well, that's what we're here for right now, right?
Well, thank you very much, Tamsin. And Tammy, I don't know if this is the moment we say to her that, where do we send the 10,000 rand invoice to, Tamsin?
Okay.